top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
Strange case. No sign of violence, yet she looks completely contorted in fear. Almost as if she'd been frightened to death. As if she'd seen something too horrible to live through.
You're listening to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of genre cinema. Hi, my name is Chris, and along with Jeff, we talk about movies that aren't really awful at all. Horror, action, kung fu, musicals, post-apocalyptic, women in prison films, and much, much more. From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 242, Baskin, from 2015. And speaking of numbers, I just found out, and I didn't notice it, that the new downtown Toronto headquarters is on the 13th floor. Dun, dun, dun. Which I think is hilarious that buildings, including my own high-rise apartment, do not acknowledge the 13th floor. And anytime I do see it, it's so rare that I take mental note of it. Mm-hmm. So I saw it at the Robarts Library, which is the University of Toronto main library and one of the largest in the world. They proudly have a 13th floor. So I think it's always cool when there's a 13th floor. Here, there is not. So it's fun. You're on the de facto 13th floor.
But it's referred to as the penthouse floor. So just like at Jefferson's, I moved on up. You know?
Yes, exactly.
But the reality is, every time I say someone in the building, oh, I'm, you know, like going to the elevator, press the penthouse. Like, ooh, penthouse. You know, it's not like the Drummonds and Different Strokes, okay? I used to think about it. Every time I thought about the penthouse, it's like that. You know, you got the stairs going up to. They never really
showed. It's so funny because I was corrected about penthouses by another friend of mine who lived in a high rise because I was questioning why the penthouse in my decrepit building wasn't fancy. Mm-hmm. I thought that units were bigger. We've just been perverted by 80s television.
Totally. And adult magazines as well.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that at least we're perverted in a good way.
But I mean, you know, name penthouse. So literally and figuratively, I guess. But
this is true.
It's the top floor. It happens to be the floor after 12. It's a 13. See, it's ridiculous because, I mean, when you have these buildings where they call the 13th floor the 14th floor, and they just skip their... You're on the 13th floor.
There's no fooling yourself on
just
that.
Like,
yeah.
You know, so if just because the fact is that they're calling it the 14th, just count. You're on number 13. If that really is going to make you trepidatious, well, I don't know, man. There's something, for me personally, 13 has always been lucky.
Me too.
I've always, like, one thing I always do on any Friday 13th is buy a lottery ticket, because I tend to have really good luck on the Friday 13th. Well. Maybe that's a self-fulfilling prophecy, because I feel like good things are going to happen to me. But it's just like the opposite. I think I was once offered a job on a Friday the 13th. Just a lot of good things. Now, of course, in Asian culture, the number 4 is the equivalent of our 13.
Yeah, and good luck selling a house with that number.
You got it. And in, for example, China, when they build buildings, they always omit the 4th floor. So many different cultures have numbers that they consider to be verboten or taboo or what have you. And speaking of different cultures, this is a foreign film. This is a film from Turkey.
Yeah, and when you hear Turkey, if you're a longtime listener of this show, you'll think the Turkish something, and it's usually a pejorative for, like, there's the Turkish Spider-Man, the Turkish Star Wars. These are, like, hopelessly inept, hilarious knockoffs.
Still the Turkish Death Wish is my favorite,
I gotta tell you. Oh my god. Yeah. And this is an interesting part of the world because it straddles both Middle Eastern and European sensibilities. Mm-hmm. Istanbul is a place I've always wanted to go. Like, the Black Sea kind of fascinates me. Mm-hmm. And it's such a wild place. Like, it's so beautiful. I'm dying to check it out at some point.
Now it's probably just a little too wild.
This is true. It's backsliding into some kind of authoritarianism. But maybe there's still time. I don't know.
Things are cyclical. Things will change again.
Yeah, definitely. And this was put out by Raven Banner.
Distributed by Raven Banner, which is a Canadian distribution company, which you're going to give a shout out to, because they put out some amazing genre films, including one of my favorites from, I think, maybe even the same year, Starry Eyes. I wrote about it in our book, because, I mean, there was one indelible scene. I recall you buying this directly from Raven Banner.
I did, at Horrorama. And so they had a booth. We were just chatting, and I just thought, I think it was one of them who lauded it, and I'm pretty, you know, suggestible when it comes to these kinds of things, and I'm game for and down for whatever. And I didn't even know that this debuted at TIFF in 2015 and caused a big sensation
during the Midnight Madness programming. Yeah,
yeah, and it's one of those films that, again, where there's like a big departure, disconnect, polarity between critic talk and people talk. The people talk has yet to catch up with the critic talk.
Well, yeah, I mean, we could talk. I mean, there's a lot of films in recent vintage like that. The Babadook, The Witch, It Follows. One that I saw very recently, Hereditary, which we have to discuss on the podcast one day. An absolute work of brilliance. And yet, when it comes to highbrow horror, or horror that is different than, I guess, you know, your standard stock and slash, I don't know what it is, but I mean, our community, this community, there are people that really appreciate it when filmmakers, you know, attempt to elevate the genre, but then you get a lot of this, and I hate this, and this is indicative of just a society now. Everything has got to be so polarized, so black or white. There's no in between. Worst movie ever. I heard that about all the aforementioned films. And I remember Hereditary. When the buzz started coming, the people that saw it, you know, that got were fortunate enough to see it before release. Dude, you gotta see Hereditary. I'm still shaken from this film. Amazing. And then the film came out. And then I keep seeing it on my Facebook. Worst movie ever. Yeah. Why? Because they didn't get it. In a lot of ways, I didn't get it. It's a very ambiguous movie. I got it, but I have to watch it again. But I absolutely was amazed by the elements in it. And one thing I must say, she won't get a nomination just by virtue of the genre.
By virtue of the fact that six movies have been nominated in 91 years of Oscar film awards.
Are you talking about horror movies?
Yes.
Six.
Yes.
Well, what? Sons of Lambs, The Exorcist.
The Exorcist.
Get Out.
Yes.
Those are three. What else?
The others are skating. I want to say The Omen, but that's probably wrong. I know there's six, so that's okay. The important thing. So not many.
And of course, the only one to actually win the big picture, the best picture, was Silence of the Lambs.
Which was not even a pure horror in many respects.
Right.
It's more like a thriller procedural.
Mm-hmm. And definitely, I would say it's more of a horror with a mass appeal in the sense. You know, it was directed by, I believe, it was Jonathan Demme, right? Am I mistaken?
I believe so, yeah.
And of course, Anthony Hopkins and Jodie Foster. I mean, these are, you know, world-class actors.
Yeah.
But Toni Collette in Hereditary was superlative. A performance that just rips it out, rips your heart out of your soul. And I remember discussing this movie with a mutual friend of ours who I recommended to see it. And we said that, I mean, take out all the horror elements and you've got a great film. You've got a great film that just deals with a family's ways of coping with loss, death, etc. And yeah, I mean, there's that movie A Ghost Story that came out last year with Rooney Mara and Casey Affleck, you know.
Isn't he the good Affleck?
No, he's the bad Affleck.
Oh, really? I think he's a better actor, isn't he?
No, but he's a sex predator.
I don't think Ben Affleck's a particularly good actor, but I thought he's the better Affleck. But
I mean, the other Affleck was accused as well, but there's a lot of bar smoke. Casey's the one that actually paid out a lot.
Interesting.
Of people. Yeah, it's funny how
in
the whole Me Too thing, so many actors were, rightfully so, you know, sort of have to pay for their transgressions with their career, and yet Casey Affleck was allowed to slide.
Well, I guess he won an Oscar,
for Manchester by the Sea.
Yeah. Never saw that. It sounded like the kind of movie.
And I remember,
beyond pretentious.
I remember
like something that'd be mocked mercilessly on the Family Guy.
It's always a tradition that on the Oscars that whoever won Best Actress the previous year presents Best Actor.
Uh-huh.
And then whoever won Best Actor presents Best Actress. So in this case, it was Brie Larson who won Best Actress for The Room, and she's somebody who is, you know, that's a cause that's very near and dear to her
heart. Yeah, yeah.
And she was forced to hand this statuette, which is worthless anyway, it doesn't matter.
We've
already talked about how
to
Casey Affleck, and you could just read all over her face that she was absolutely disgusted.
Yeah.
But anyway, I digress. Take away the horror elements, you've still got an incredible movie. Because, well, there was, I mean, it was strong from in so many different elements, but Toni Collette, she's just an amazing actress.
Oh, she's incredible. She's phenomenal.
And yet, we're now about 10 minutes into this recording, we've yet to really talk about Baskin.
Well, I was thinking, obviously, horror is a really global phenomenon, mm-hmm. and there's no rom-com or period drama group that gets together and hangs out and goes, oh yeah, what about those period dramas? Like horror fans, you could say maybe action fans to a certain degree, but there's nobody like horror fans. We embrace this genre like no other genre embraces its
members. Unless you're part of the worst movie ever camp.
Yeah, that's a lot of crossover with mm-hmm. different, everything from... oh God, what was that thing with Demi Moore? That god-awful thing. But yeah, there's lots of bad movies. But this, I always thought, like...
Horror fans are more adventurous, and they, in a mm-hmm. sense, will seek out if it's... It doesn't matter where it was made, you know? There's all these people, oh, I don't like to read, I don't want to see foreign films. I talk about subtitles. I had a big problem with this one, but we'll get to that in a moment or two.
Yeah, well, this is another... I mean, talk about... by way of intro, we discussed going to different... you know, areas and different sensibilities, different cultural signifiers, 13 in our culture, 4 in Asian cultures, going like boundary crossing, just expanding your horizons. Turkey, I don't know that much about.
Well, that's
and
the
I was
thing I, really
I was reading to... lots about it, and uh-huh. I was reaching out to actually Instagram people that were followers and who were in Turkey. I was trying because I can't read Turkish script. It's mm-hmm. kind of like Cyrillic. It's kind of like, so I was wondering,
well, see,
what the yeah. reaction would have been mm-hmm. in a country that's struggling to marry modernity with religion. Mm-hmm. And this, I don't know how this movie would have been perceived there.
Yes, because I mean, there's a lot of this movie, in my opinion, just is very the complete antithesis of Islamic. I mean, some of the you know,
in
the
many respects,
they
yeah.
have, and some of the stuff we see. Now, I got it. There's a caveat before we start really delving into this film, and in many ways, I'm very excited to discuss this movie with you, just so you can explain it to me. And the reason why is because, yeah, you had seen it before. This is my first viewing. I watched it on Amazon Prime, so it's available for streaming. Unfortunately, there were issues with the subtitles. Scenes would go by with no subtitles. Then you would get this isolated subtitle from like 10 minutes ago, which had no relation to what was going on. And so it got to the point where I just said to myself, okay, you know what? The subtitles are doing nothing for me, so I'm just going to watch this from a pure visual standpoint, kind of get a sense of what's going on. But I really don't... In amongst itself, even with the subtitles, this is a very ambiguous movie.
Oh yeah, this is the kind of thing where I wish I knew more about, like Turkish culture. Like my ex boss from the college was Turkish. I had several colleagues at our mutual. Obviously, we can't say where we both worked, but several Turkish people, and I just wish I had I should have approached it because there's a lot of heavy duty issues in this movie.
I was going to ask you, and I'll just ask you right now, you probably not have an answer for it, but it doesn't matter. What I find is that movies are always, in some form or fashion, some more overt than others, indicative of the culture in which it was made, right? They always say something about the place that it comes from. And if it's a place where there's a lot of political strife or turmoil or what have you, it's reflected, especially a lot in the genre films.
We
talked about a Serbian film just last week. And in my opinion, that movie is an allegory for, you know, Serbian society.
Yeah, exactly.
And I want to ask you, like, what does this say about Turkey in terms of the cultural climate, the global climate?
Oh, my God. I have no clue. I can't even begin because I was... Okay, we'll sketch out a little bit of a plot outline. Mm-hmm. First film, and there's going to be lots of analogs to Italian horror. So in the first scene, you have a little kid who walks in on his mother who is engaged in coitus. And he's having it's like a nightmarish.
Do you think any of us would be using the word coitus
if it weren't for Sheldon from Big Bang Theory? Oh my God!
Nobody would. You know, curses on you. For
yeah,
that.
Yeah. Anyway. Well, thankfully, it's coming to an end. But even this scene, so you have a little child who is hearing, I guess, the throes of passion and the heavy breathing, and he, walks in, and it seems like a dreamscape. It seems unreal, mm-hmm. but is it real? Because this is a scene that is revisited by one of the protagonists in the mm-hmm. film. So this is a fairly simple plot. We have a bunch of police officers, one of whom was the kid. And I think it was Arda, but it could be Safi. It doesn't matter. We can't go through all the names. There's six police officers. And one of whom is the standard par for the course for these types of things, whereas like there's the rookie, and then there's the more seasoned vets. And we're introduced to these guys after this dreamscape. Mm-hmm. And this is really disturbing stuff. And we're introduced to these guys in a bar. And they're telling like stories that what's the expression?
Well,
they're telling some bawdy tales about prostitution, and
again, like there was the subtitles were going in and out. It was very hard for me to really understand what they were saying, but I did get a little bit here and there. And I know they were talking about sex, and they were talking about some very transgressive things about sex.
Very, very.
In a sense, you know, you have these guys just sitting around a table just shooting the shit, and it reminded me almost of Reservoir Dogs, like at the beginning with the whole like a virgin. But one of the few subtitles that actually came through, and I actually wrote it down, I believe it was the Rezzy, the uncle, or the
Reza, I believe.
Who said, because they started talking about having sex with animals. And he goes, hey, 70% of all Turkish men lost their virginity by fucking an animal.
Yeah, that was absolutely unbelievable. Funny you should mention Tarantino, because AV Club said this has Tarantino elements. Mm. And I could see that now. But yeah, and then beyond, like, the chicken fucking, and then there's the guy who mistakenly picks up a lady of the evening who's not a lady, shall we say, who doesn't have the lady parts. And I'm thinking, how does this... Like,
he's retelling the story, and, you know, and everyone's laughing. Everyone's laughing. Oh, you had sex with somebody who's thought they were a lady, but
they were really packing down below the waist. Right. So someone's really well hung.
And then a young kid is laughing too, and then all of a sudden I'm reminded of like Goodfellas with Joe Pesci. What are you laughing at, right?
And
the kid is like, well, you had sex with a man. He's like, no, I didn't. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So you have this like this veneer of machismo where they're like, I didn't have sex with a man. You know?
Yeah, and then it was the son of the bar owner who was laughing along with it, and mm-hmm. they threatened him in a very ominous, like, very affecting scene. So I'm at a loss to explain what's going on and trying to square how a movie this kind of depraved and over the top mm-hmm. and sexual and gross and violent could be released in a country that again is struggling with this kind of, like, you know, squaring its secular sensibilities with Islam. Yeah, I mean, there's lots of minaret towers. There's mm-hmm. lots of mosques. Like Istanbul, it may be European, but it's affected by Islamic sensibilities.
I wrote down, it was hard for me to get down much because of the dialogue, but I wrote down, you know, exchanging sexy ribald tales.
Ribald.
And then I put in brackets, very non-Islamic. In other words, everything, every tale that they were just regaling each other and laughing and just, you know, normally I would say not kosher, but in this case I would say not halal at all. There's nothing halal.
That's the thing,
because
I always, my perception is that the two countries that are the least Islamic countries of them all, and that's by virtue of meeting people, immigrants to Toronto.
Sometimes even refugees.
And yes. Turkish and Iranian. Iranian people. Yeah. I've never met someone from either culture who has ever darkened the door of a mosque. Ever. And there's people who drink and gamble, mm-hmm. like, who would, I mean, yeah, very...
Now that the cat's out of the bag, and I mentioned that, you know, my marriage has come to an end, mm-hmm. and I've been sort of dipping my toe into the dating pool again, and I went on a couple dates with a Turkish expat, but she's not an expat, she's an exile. Basically, a terrorist, a domestic terrorist in terrorist. They consider her a domestic terrorist because she's a feminist. Uh-huh. And she owned and operated a feminist blog. Ergo, she was considered to be a terrorist. So she had to basically pack up, leave her home country, leave her family.
Because I was going to say that she would have been Kurdish. because they're the minority in that country that finds himself under the jackboot of the particularly the new regime, and they're the people who they're a really oppressed minority there. And I thought that's for sure what it's going to be. But if it's, well, I don't want to say just a feminist, but a la feminine in Russia. Yeah. Wow.
I got to say, I got a kick out of it. I said, this is the first time I've ever sat down and shared a beer with a terrorist. And I got to say, this is kind of fun.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Interesting. So again, like this, we're projecting, we're speculating. This is to the best of our abilities, trying to delve into the psychology of what would have been going on at the time and what, but maybe it's nothing. Maybe it's just cops. Maybe there's no meaning. Mm-hmm. Maybe a cigar is just a cigar, as they said about, you know, what Freud. Who knows?
Indeed.
But there's something about these police officers, and they're going to have to face a situation that is incredibly difficult to go through.
Yeah. And ultimately, what I was magically and strictly from visuals, really, is that somehow they found themselves in a situation where they were in a literal hellscape. Some were able to survive, some not. I'll throw out another film. This gave me a real sort of vibe. Hellraiser. Did you feel it too?
Yeah, well, I definitely felt some Clive Barker. Like, there's a heavy-duty gothic atmosphere, and I was trying to think of another movie that takes place.
Well, why say Hellraiser before we move away? It's because you do have a character, you know, this sort of like otherworldly character, right, who is encouraging others to throw away worldly convention and join them in an ungodly world where they can live to their heart's content. In other words, they can indulge in all the hedonism and so on, just like Pinhead, just like the Cenobites in Hellraiser. It's like, you know, throw off the shackles of everyday humanity and join us. You know, some say we're angels, but some say we're demons, but we're angels to others and that sort of thing. Pleasure, pain, all that sort of stuff. Plug for a Hellraiser podcast.
I love that one. It's a really terrific one.
So I got that vibe too. Back. And yeah, I mean, there's a lot of like, there's visually speaking, a lot of Italian influence, a lot of use of Suspiria, you know, primary color, gel lighting, your reds, your blues, what have you. You mentioned some Fulci-esque vibe here and there.
Oh yeah, and it really hits all the beats of what we come to expect from horror. So it takes you to another place on a journey. Like, obviously, the Joseph Campbell go from one area to another, go into a journey to a hell. But there's also, like, othering, where these police are basically they're called to a crime scene and they investigate, and
so I didn't even know that. I didn't know what they're doing. Called to a scene. Longer, yeah.
They're in a van and they sing along to apparently like a hit pop song,
right?
And everything is kosher again, so to speak.
Everything
and
they're just halal.
And they're singing along, and you get the sense of the camaraderie. They've all known each other a long time. It's all fine and dandy.
You got some veterans, but they're all
A figure emerges from the brush, and they smack them with their van, and so they have to, like,
at that point we have a bit of an unreliable narrator thing going on, because from what I gleaned, the person driving the van saw somebody who ran in front of the van.
Yes, the others could not corroborate the tale. Exactly. So that adds to the weird ambiguity of it. And this incident causes the van to lurch into a ditch and into a river, and they escape with their lives. Of course, they've been drinking. This is obviously some predicament. And they meet the equivalent of the backwoodsman types that you'd see in the south of the Mason, south of the Mason-Dixon line in the U.S. So you see these people who are otherized in a way that they don't have technology. They ask them for a phone. They say they don't have them. This is an area called Ingiach. Who knows where it is? I don't even think it's anywhere, because I looked it up, and it's just a made-up place. And these people have threadbare clothing. They have they don't have any housing. They live in the woods, and they live they eat their food over fire pits, and they're basically the backwoods hillbillies that we know and love from our culture. So I thought that was weird. So it hits that beat, it hits the otherworldly beat, and then it gets
progressively more strange. The film continues.
I don't even know what to say. I mean, they come across, and again, there's references, repeated references to frogs. I was almost thinking about the Psychomania podcast, where there's, and where a frog is obviously a transgressive creature because it's amphibian, it goes from one medium to another, from water
to land
and back and everything. But it didn't, like, this was something I thought would have some sort of charged meaning in Islam. But again, that's just me projecting, because this is a very secular culture. Indeed. Maybe it has nothing to do with Islam.
But that, see, that when you just said frogs, I kind of went, oh God, because that's sort of what did I learn? I'm kind of saving that. So, but yes, frogs is definitely a recurring motif. Another one that I was going to say for recurring, for what did we learn, but another reoccurring motif is meat. Meat, meat, meat. We see close-ups of meat being butchered. We see meat sizzling on a grill, almost like, you know, the quote-unquote food porn type.
We see meat, blood dripping from a chicken that was recently killed at the bar where they're at for their meal and everything. Mm-hmm. It's like, what is that about?
And I mean, in Islamic culture, I mean, meat is something that, you know, I mean, it's the way it's prepared, the way it's served, etc. It has to be all according to the rules of halal, which is very similar to the rules of kashrut, their kosher, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Jews and Islam and Muslims have a lot in common.
It's true.
As much as, you know, people like to think that we're mortal enemies, in a sense, the reality is we have so much in common. And if we could just recognize those commonalities as opposed to focus on our differences.
If they would, yeah.
I think, you know, but that's just my naive reductivist way of...
Well, again, are we reading too much into this? Because if this is the most secular culture...
The most secular
Islamic culture. I mean, maybe who knows? But obviously, the we're going biblical with the frogs and plague.
That's the
whole
plague.
Thing.
And so I'm going to say what I learned right now, because again, it's all for me. It's mostly visual, right? Because I had so few subtitles to go on, but I saw biblical references galore. I mean, not only did you have the frogs, which of course. I'm thinking of the plague. I'm thinking even of Magnolia, you know, with the raining frogs.
Or Macbeth with, I think, it's also known as a paddock in Old English, where the frog is added to, like, a witch's cauldron brew to make it more devilish, along with, like, part of a cat, I think a bone from the cat, and, like, it's a devilish creature. Mm-hmm. So it kept coming up.
Another one of the biblical plagues was blood, and there's scenes when people are seeing other characters, like, all of a sudden just dripping with blood or something is gushing blood. And again, we don't know if this is figments of their imagination or if it's literally happening, but blood, blood, blood. There's that. There's another scene where a character, it was our protagonist, the young cop, Agra.
Yeah, Arda, I think was his name. So Arda and the old dirty uncle character was Yavuz.
Where when everything just sort of goes into pure sort of like nightmarish sort of visuals and logic, he is inexplicably underwater. And so I'm thinking right away, baptism. And then all of a sudden, this gigantic hand reaches in to pull him out, right? And is this literal? Is this metaphoric? I don't know.
Who knows?
But that gigantic hand to me represented the hand of God himself, pulling him out from the water.
Oh my God.
There is later on, we see some of our quote unquote heroes chained up in such a way that they remind me of crucifixion. There's a recurring goat motif, of course, the goat, Baphomet, the devil.
Yes.
There's so much recurring religious motif that, but I can't really make heads or tails of it because it once again, it's all
ritual. Out of our comfort zone. I mean, ritual cleansing, ablation, water is common, probably a cultural universal with all religions. I have no idea if that in any way, it's possible that they were underscoring that these police were being punished somehow, because at the crime scene they're investigating, they come upon a police precinct that has been abandoned since the Ottoman Empire. And I was thinking, like, is this a modern Turkey's way of atoning for whatever sins they committed in the Ottoman Empire? Because the Ottomans was referenced here, and I was like, I don't know. They go into this abandoned police precinct, and that's where real hell breaks loose. And I think, in both senses
you
of the term.
Maybe say literal hell breaks loose.
Yeah, and that's where there's, again, a transgressing. We're treated to another, speaking of police, siren sounds from our downtown Toronto headquarters. We're not kidding when we're saying we're right downtown. So, again, I don't know if Like they're transgressing family, because there is a kind of family in a Hellraiser sense, in a Texas Chainsaw Massacre sense, that's being led by a patriarch who is an unbelievable character. And I can't spoil it, because there's scenes that he's involved in that are like something that'll stay with me. Like I was like heaping praise on this film when I first saw it, because this is clearly, and the director's name is Cam, I hope I'm pronouncing this, Evranol, I hope that's right. This guy is obviously, and I think he said as much, worshiping at the altar of Lucio Fulci and Dario Argento. And he said as much in an interview, I think, with Shock Till You Drop, how they were much more impactful to him growing up, maybe it's geographical proximity, than the likes of George Romero or David Cronenberg. So the translation of this movie, Baskin, is police raid. It's not even as ambiguous. Mm-hmm. Like, this movie is so fraught with issues. I mean, the recurring nightmare of him walking in on his mother in flagrante delicto,
the demonic hand.
The hand. Mm-hmm. The fact that I don't know if you can come up with one. I don't want to put you on the spot here, but this was a movie that is completely and utterly shrouded in darkness. I can't think of another horror movie that takes place exclusively at night.
I think there's quite a few. I mean, I can't think of one.
But usually there'd be at least some respite, some day scene, something. This was from beginning to end.
Okay, I'll give you one right now. Just off the top of my head, The Strangers, home invasion movies. They usually happen in real time. So, yeah.
Sounds like a podcastable movie.
Have you not seen The Strangers?
I have not.
Oh, there was a sequel that came out recently that just came and went in the theaters. It was very blockbuster, but yeah. A lot of home invasion movies happen in real time, and they happen usually at night.
Well, I guess if it's inside a home, it doesn't really matter.
That Mike Flanagan film that was on that we both sort of didn't like, whereas everyone else was going gug over it.
The blind protagonist?
Yeah, I think that took pretty much exclusive.
I guess so, yeah.
What is going on there?
What is going on? My God. some five-alarm rager? Like, maybe we should be podcasting The Towering Inferno or something.
But it's... I gotta say, I mean... I didn't understand this fact, a lot of this film, by virtue of the fact that I didn't have the benefit of subtitles. But even if I did have the benefit of subtitles, I don't think I still would have understood it fully from a first viewing. You, now you've seen what, 2-3 times?
This is my third viewing, yeah.
And you're still not 100%. It's a very ambiguous movie, but you and I, we tolerate, and I think we appreciate ambiguity, and it's a credit to this film that even though we don't fully understand where all the dots are connected, we both appreciate the film.
Oh, I was just reminded, my God, if you missed the subtitles, there's a monologue by this cult-like figure.
I got bits and pieces.
And he goes on this like almost Colonel Kurtz, like lengthy diatribe, and I don't even know what you want to call it, where he talks about people are always trying to find new things to worship. It almost reminded me of there's a pretty good documentary on Netflix about the Jonestown massacre and Jim Jones and the cult-like sway he had over his followers, and it gave that movie, I don't want to go on a tangent, but that movie gave me a new, I don't want to say appreciation, that sounds hackneyed and kind of insensitive, a new sense of what really transpired, because these...
Could we say just more of an understanding?
An understanding. Yeah. That's a better way of putting it, because I always thought that these people were just dupes who drank the Kool-Aid, and that's a very pejorative phrase.
Yeah.
But I found out that these people, and from survivors, that they were shot at when they were trying to leave. So a plane came to rescue some of them, and if I'm not mistaken, a U.S. congressman from California was killed. So trying to just say that some of these people had no hope and they would have been killed had they not drunk the poison anyway. There were armed guards at the compound. So I thought that was very interesting. But there's a highly charismatic and unique looking antagonist in this film. I don't want to spoil it. What an unbelievable character.
He's an imp, you know, with a malformed face, who is attired in Not always, but oftentimes Obi-Wan Kenobi type robes. Yeah. And he has around his neck canes and locks. So yeah. And he is, and that's where I got the Pinhead analog, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
He's the one that's trying to entice people to
He has a lair, and there's no other way to describe it. There's a lair with where the captors are writhing in chains. Yeah. And this is really, I mean,
Martyrs. That also reminds me of the first bit of Martyrs, yeah.
And there was a lot of the rattling of chains, there's rape, there was all sorts of degradation and hell going on. And I don't know, this movie invested a lot in our main characters, and then it took them to a place where you cared about them, and then you took them to a place where you couldn't imagine yourself being. But again, it's not wholly original because we've seen this before, but the beats that it hits are fantastic. Mm-hmm. And when the first, they come across one of their colleagues in the precinct who is completely fucked up by what he's seen and is standing against the wall, beating his head against the concrete wall. And that was badass. That was intense. Yeah. So there's a lot of just incredible horror, mm-hmm. and I really hope this film, still can find an audience. It found a critical audience, as we said before, Rotten Tomatoes, critical darling, the IMDb people and the Rotten Tomatoes people are slow to, let's say, realize what I perceive as its greatness, maybe. Mm-hmm. And it's hard for you to, maybe, you know.
Well, I'm okay, so just deviating a bit from the format, just a wee bit, I've already mentioned what I learned because I was going to talk about all the biblical motifs that I found. Yes. I have to abstain from a star rating only because it's not fair to give a movie a star rating without, you know, me experiencing the film as it was meant to be experienced for a Western audience with the subtitles. So I have great admiration for the film, and I will definitely see it again, and I recommend it, but I cannot give it a star rating based on the visuals alone. I have to sort of get a more... As my boss is his favorite word, I hate saying
But fulsome prison?
A more fulsome sense of with the dialogue and so on. So what did you learn, Chris?
I learned that, this building is fantastic, and there's...
Did it remind you a bit of Session 9? Because there was that,
it
too.
It really did. Yeah. It was like a starched collar full of just pure atmosphere. There was like an Escher staircase where the cops were descending into hell. Obviously, again, this is something we've seen before. When you descend into hell, obviously hell is below us, so you have these stairs, and you have flashlights shone into the dark. It's par for the course, but this guy's, it's his first full-length feature, and my God, are his influences on point. Like, he hasn't done anything since, and who knows why. I would like to reach out to him somehow and figure out what, because this is a sensational debut, I think. I learned that...
No, why don't we do that? Why don't we reach out to
him? That would be absolutely fantastic. I found out that this cult group, it was almost like Mad Max. I don't even know how to describe it. Yeah, a little bit of Obi-Wan mixed with like a Yoda, mixed with a Mad Max, mixed with like... I don't even know. I'm at a loss. Mixed with Martyrs, there's obviously something transgressive about how they treat the police when they meet. And I don't want to spoil it. I think our listeners can probably guess how this meeting ends. But they say that they were summoned to by someone or something to become this group. So again, my little tangent about Jim Jones. Like, I don't know what it was that is. I don't know whether these police are being punished.
That could be very well it. It's just, you know, at the beginning when they were regaling themselves with these tales. I mean, everything is purportedly... There's a lot of machismo. You know, let's talk about this, let's talk about that, let's have a bit of laughs. But I think these are all tales that they actually experience. And again, as I said before, very non-halal, non-Islamic. So maybe that's the whole point. That they are punished for this. But... You know what? I will have to watch this film again. It's a shame that Amazon Prime had their glitches with the subtitles, but I will seek it out. In fact, I'm going to borrow your copy.
Yeah, that would be just absolutely fantastic. And again, like, you can't say you don't want to paint it all with one brush, but certainly the country has redeemed itself from all the Death Wish and the knockoffs. But I'm the performance is off the charts too. I want to figure out more of what the motivations were and if we're reading too much into it.
Well, let's do it, man. Let's actually reach out to the director. Maybe we can get it. We can interview him on the show. It's been a long time since we've had a featured interview, and you know, it might be interesting.
Yeah, and a shout out to Horrorama, which is coming up, and we will be chatting to some of the luminaries that will be taking part there, and Louis Del Grant, who infamously had his head explode in Scanners, a Canadian legendary actor.
The most famous head explosion of all time.
My God. We're going to get a chance to meet him, and we'll see whether we can get some interviews. We can't make any promises. We'll see about, we don't know to the extent our involvement will be in Horrorama, it's fair to say. Star rating for this film, I'm going to give it 4 because I'm loving the pinks and the blues of the film set in the house with the basement that was underwater, the Argento film.
Inferno,
yeah, it had those just unbelievable colors. Planet of the Vampires, it had this rich orange, pink, blue hues. Like, it was so voluptuous and just extravagant in its visuals. It was such a beautiful movie.
I mean, it means a lot. There's a lot of people will say, well, for example, Howard's End is a beautiful movie. You know what I mean? Like, this is a gory movie.
There's a scene with the eye, the eyeball, that is incredibly transgressive. Mm-hmm. So a la the Shard in Zombie. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so if you love Italian horror, you just run over to, you can't exactly, run to your computer and just seek it out on Amazon Prime and do yourself a favor and support budding, talented, burgeoning, immensely capable filmmaking from all over the world. I mean, this is exciting. I just feel like I'm at a loss. I feel ignorant, but yet I'm willing to learn. Like, I want to know more about Turkish culture, if I've said anything untoward, my bad. Like, I want to know what makes these people tick, what makes the Erdogan of today tick, what happened in the Ottoman times. I want to know more about it. So this is great stuff. Your star rating as well?
Well,
having seen half a movie, essentially.
I have to abstain. It's not fair. Yeah. It's not fair for me to give it a star rating. I mean, it's positive. You know what I mean? Like, I could say right now 3 stars, but I mean, with the dialogue, I could bump up to 4 or 5.
Well, even just if you were to catch the last 15 minutes to see this incredibly, unhinged, spiel. Mm-hmm. There's nothing, no other way to describe it, by this, little person, tyrant, midget, psychopath. I don't even know. That's doing it a disservice because, I mean, and apparently he didn't even have that much makeup because this is how he actually looks. So
amazing.
It's... Yeah.
So instead of a star rating, I'm just going to say, give it a recommendation.
Good
see
stuff.
It. See it.
Yeah.
Don't waste any time. Just go see it. Baskin.
Check out our website, www.reallyawfulmovies.com, reviewing all sorts of films from all over the globe. And we will be touching down in Japan, I hope shortly, with Ichi the Killer.
Oh.
Another one of these films which I could not get through. And I don't know if I can.
Oh my God.
Yeah, as you stroke your beard with tyrannical glee. Very creepy.
You talked about TIFF, dude. I saw that movie. It's been nice. I was there at the Midnight Madness premiere at the Toronto International Film Festival.
I imagine there must have been walkouts.
Oh, there were walkouts galore. You wouldn't
Jesus
believe.
Christ.
And you would think, Midnight Madness, it's a like-minded audience. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Amazingly enough, the premiere was set for September 11th, 2001.
Ouch.
Of course, that had to be. They had to put a kibosh on it because of the events earlier that day. Of course, the whole festival was kind of in disarray. I was volunteering at the time.
I was in New York a week earlier.
Mm-hmm. But they, as they say, the show must go on. And 2 days later, there it was, unspooling on the big screen at the now unfortunately defunct and totally missed Uptown Cinema. One of these grand old
Dames.
Monoplexes,
yeah.
1,000-seater, packed to watch Ichi the Killer at midnight, 2 days after 9/11.
Wow.
And yes, there were walkouts, but fuck those people. They didn't know what
exactly.
They were missing. So it was, we are definitely going to do Ichi. Yeah, there's a lot of Mikkei. Audition. We got, there's so much Mikkei we got to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't even begun to scratch the surface of my Mike love on this podcast. So, I mean, we've talked about Sono, well, you know.
Yeah, and one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. That would be fantastic. And it would be fantastic, too, if you checked out and also left comments for our podcast on iTunes, because it really helps with listenership, or anywhere you like.
Anywhere where there's a comment, even on our page, you know, like where you can just our quote-unquote homepage, you can put a comment there, right?
Yeah, for sure. And in particular, if you're listening in Turkey or you're from there, I would love to hear more about it, just for the sake of learning. It'd be fantastic. And be sure to tune in to more episodes of the Really Awful Movies podcast, and we'll talk to you soon.
Take care. Thank you.